as the smell of nail varnish finally disappears because she's put the top back on, I'm joined by Jacqueline Haig. Her show here is called The Goddess. Tell us about the Vagina Museum.
No, just the Vagina Museum today put a call out for shows, and I would love to perform my show there. Because my show Goddess, it's about my true experiences working as a receptionist in a tantric massage parlour, and explores female sexuality, including the quest for the mythical female G-spot.
Now let's attempt to deconstruct that, if that's possible. What is a parlour in a modern day setting?
Well, it's funny, you're right, it's a sort of old-fashioned word, isn't it? A parlour used to be like a lounge or a reception room, didn't it? Going into the parlour for a cup of tea, dear.
Yeah, and you receive people into the parlour.
Yes, yes, you do. Mate, I'm not sure why that word's still used, because it is an old-fashioned word. But then there is something quite quaint and old-fashioned about a tantric massage parlour, yeah. Isn't there?
But I guess you had the perfect observation point to collect material for a show.
Yeah, as soon as I worked there, I was like, wow, this would make a really good play. It's so kind of visual, like they have the leopard skin sofa and a telephone shaped like a stiletto and all the girls in their costumes and the men who you only really ever saw as shoes outside the door. You know, were they trainers? Were they posh brogues? Were they? That would sort of give you the clue about who the punter was, right?
Yeah, yeah. But you've been on the comedy, the performing scene for a while. What made you decide to do a show about, you know, your own working place, because that could be quite risky?
Well, I only worked there for 6 months,
okay,
as I was finishing my master's at Goldsmiths in script writing, and so it's not a career that I was worried about damaging by making jokes about it, if that's what you mean, Paul.
No, but only that, you know, it can be about people and people can remember, and some people deliberately then choose to not tell their story, whereas a lot of people up here, and they're always drawing on their close observation of themselves and what's going on around them.
Comedians normally do tell true stories about themselves, don't they? I like that kind of comedy as well. I like confessional, sort of personal stories. So I've always liked that kind of comedy. And there's nothing to, you know, there's nothing nasty in this. It's not, I would say, well, it's been called heartwarming in the review. That's one of the words that was used. And I think it's ultimately a kind of warm, feel-good and empowering story.
Yeah. And in terms of your intention then as an artist, once you decided to do this, I mean, was heartwarming a surprise to you, or was that an intention going into the creation of it?
I definitely wasn't out to character assassinate anyone, and I to be honest, usually write stories that have got happy endings.
Yeah.
I personally like to spread a positive message, an empowering message for women and for everyone. So pretty much all of my stories are got happy endings. They're about growth and personal transformation. I probably used to write more negative, dark things when I was like a sort of young, traumatised student, but not for a while.
And so, assuming that our fringe-going audience and listeners here know what massage means, what's tantric?
Well, that is the thing. Can't give too much away, because that's obviously what I very much found out when I went to work there, because I didn't really know, you know, as I say in the show, all I'd heard about Tantra was something to do with Sting and Trudy Style having sex for hours in the 90s. I didn't know what Tantra was, what tantric massage was, and by going there was a bit of a journey of discovery, and you know, it can also mean lots of things to lots of people.
Okay, so it's a bit of a spoiler if you answer this.
Yeah, if I tell you in too much detail, yeah.
Okay. How did you imagine the set for this?
I originally wrote the script as a film script. So in my head, I can very much see what the set would look like in a film script. And I can see, where, you know, when I'm performing, I can see the kind of shot, reverse shots exactly in my head. What you're actually going to see is a chair with a leopard skin cover, and we do have a couple of props, but a lot of it is done through, you know, mime and suggestion, and done through the visual imagery created through the words.
If I'd said to, you know, being a parent or a child, look, you've just done something a bit naughty and you've been caught at it, and the person had no regrets because they're still, as they tell you what they've done, they're remembering the anticipation and what they've done. You've sort of got that look on your face at the moment. So you're really enjoying this, aren't you?
I've probably just got a resting naughty face.
Okay, but you know, it seems like you're savouring having done this here at the Fringe. You know, you seem very immersed in it in a positive way.
Having done something about tantric massage?
Yeah, well, yeah, and a show here. And but now you're sort of licking your lips and stuff.
Well, I like things that take you into secret underworld. So I call this a peek behind the velvet curtain. And I like things that talk about that. And it also busts a few taboos about female sexuality and right. things like, you know, talking about the female G-spot and stuff like that. And I don't think that hurts. I think it's good to make it part of the conversation.
So in terms of then the writing of that, was that written as a pretty sort of finished script that you've learned and done it as a piece of theatre? Or is there improv in this, and is it more of a guide to what you're going to do?
No, it's. I mean, I'm a writer by profession, so I am always going to very much work from scripts and stuff. But I did have a background in improvised comedy, and so there are aspects of improvisation and crowd work within it. But it's a full story with characters and dramatic structure.
So has your own kind of self-performed script got things like stage directions to yourself?
Yeah, probably, yeah. And I worked with a director called Alan Short, who I've worked with before. I've script edited his scripts. He's a writer-director. He co-directed Watership Down that was on over Christmas, that won an Emmy. So, you know, he's also a very experienced director, and together we worked to structure the script a bit. But I do leave room for things like crowd work, and how much that forms a part of the script will depend on the audience on the night. So, for example, a couple of nights ago, I had someone who was quite chatty, and so we worked it in. So it's definitely can incorporate that. But sometimes people are looking at me with their arms crossed going, don't talk to me, bitch, step away, don't ask me any questions. And if they look like that, then I try not to drag them into it too much because it won't be enjoyable for anybody.
And the director didn't ask you to put any rabbits in it?
Well, there's a couple of rabbit jokes.
Oh, see, here we go. Just describe that rehearsal process. It's quite interesting when you've written the piece, you're performing the piece, but, and I agree, I think this is, when I see Fringe work here, there are some really good shows where someone's self-directed, but that is less, you know, usual. Most shows benefit from an outside view with someone that you trust.
I think that's really important because, first of all, you write it and you're like, is this funny? Is this shit? I don't know. This might be terrible. Is it terrible, Alan? And it was nice to be able to kind of... So the first part of the process was going through the script with me going, does this joke work? Is it funny? You know, does that make sense? Is this clear? Is this set up properly? So the first role was, let's say, a kind of editorial one, or I think you need a few more jokes in there, or, you know, tweak this a bit to make it funnier. So that was like the first stage. And then when we put it up on its feet, then we started to look at, okay, so how do we stage this to give the input? Because I probably play about, I haven't counted, but maybe like 10 characters. And so in the staging of it was like, okay, how can we make this really clear who's talking, but simplifying it as much as possible. But then also in the actual process, that style of, because I sort of move between talking to the audience, like I'm talking to you now in a very, you know, low-key way, to then acting out what happened, which is quite theatrical. Yeah, so well, I move between those two styles.
Since you mentioned writer, the mischievous look's kind of gone a bit. in terms of that line...
That's because that's my serious side of what I do for a living, is, right?
Yeah, exactly. You said writer.
Haggard writer who does millions of drafts.
Yeah, all the hidden suppressed memories came up. In terms of then the interaction with the audience, because you mentioned like it's cabaret, there's kind of stand-up, and then there's scripted solo performance more like theatre. When you're hearing and aware that they're reacting differently, but you've got a script to deliver, how much are you responding to that audience reaction and adapting or just noticing it and getting on with it?
Well, a bit of both. This is a sort of paradox of comedy performing, isn't it? That your brain's in two places. One, in the moment of the script, but the second one, monitoring the laughs. Why didn't that get the laugh it got yesterday? Oh, that got a big laugh. Okay, I need to pause. But no one's ever laughed there before. Normally, I just trunk through, but they've started laughing, so I'm going to have to stop and wait for it to die down. So I think when you're performing comedy, you've always got those kind of two brains working. And so it's that second brain that is aware, maybe. So I have a couple of visual bits where if they're going well, then I will, you know, milk them.
Right.
And if they're not, might stop a little bit quicker because, yeah, they're not into it. And so I'm like, okay, I'll just move on.
In terms of, you know, is it any good, Alan? Now you're here, how aware are you of how well it's going?
Well, obviously, that's one great thing about comedy is you kind of know whether it's going well or not, because if no one's laughing, then it's not going so well. However, you will get audiences that are quite quiet and you'll think, oh, God, that was bad. And then afterwards they come up to you or, you know, and they actually really liked it. So it's a real paradox that I've certainly can't understand. How is it you can say the same thing in the same way and one night we'll get massive laughs and the next night nothing? And how... If anyone can answer that, I would love to know, because it's so... Maybe that's the alchemy of comedy. It's so bizarre, really.
Or maybe the tantra of comedy.
Maybe it's the tantra of comedy. Well, tantra, I was told by one teacher, means to weave. So the relationship, without sounding too pretentious, the relationship between the audience and the performer in comedy is quite tantric. And if they want it to carry on longer, it will. And if not, you know, you are responding very much to each other, more than I started as a sort of normal actress, if you like. And in normal acting, you don't really have that so much. You're more performing the script. But in comedy, there is a much more symbiotic relationship, isn't there, with the performer and the audience. And I like that.
Yeah.
I think that's fun.
A final question that might be impossible to answer, but it's quite, I think, quite useful to speculate on. Now having done this and going forward with it, if you went back to the blank page and started to write again, do you think the same script would come out?
Well, I think I'd write what I'm doing now rather than it's taken me a while to get there to really understand it. And now I'm like, oh, I get it. I get what it is now. But it's taken me, you know, it's taken me a little while to learn, to find that. And that's something I would say with comedy as well. It takes you a while to find the project. And you find it a lot through the audience. The audience tells you also what works, what doesn't work. You can think something's brilliant. If you say it 10 times, no one laughs. You stop saying it.
Yeah.
Do you know, it's very democratic like that. The audience has a big part in the writing of it. So yes, I wish I had known exactly what I know now when I started out writing, but it doesn't work like that, does it? Unfortunately,
no.
You just have to take what you've learned and put it into the next project.
The sometime receptionist, always goddess, has spoken. Thanks for talking to Fringe Review.